You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the divisional round champions. Wait, is that a thing? Or wild card round champions, I should
wild
say.
Wild card round champion, Seattle Seahawks.
Division round entrant.
We took down the Detroit Lions.
They said it couldn't be done. They
said 27th in DVOA? Cheers to that. Like, they didn't even score a touchdown here.
It was a, in the end, dominant victory.
They are who we thought they were.
That is very correct.
What are we cheersing with here?
We are cheersing with the Everybody's Brewing local lager.
Lager. I talk about this a lot, by the way. And I think that I may have liked it more in the past. You know, when you're tailgating with Stephen Vogt, you like it a little. Things just taste a little bit better. But when I'm here drinking,
should I pick up that name you dropped?
When I'm here with you, things taste a little bit worse.
Wow. Even in the wake of a Seahawks victory, things taste worse?
Yeah, it's just your presence. Okay.
I like this beer because I like puns.
Oh, God, you really do. I'm into Everybody's Brewing, though, out of White Salmon, Washington. I think what they do good stuff.
Have we discussed already on the podcast where White Salmon is?
Yeah, numerous times.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the only thing we've talked about, in fact. Good.
Yeah, that and how to get food in Portland.
We haven't talked about that yet. Just wait until we talk about that, about your sneak move in Portland.
Our loyal listener, Katie, was upset about the notion that we were just going to talk about food in Portland
instead
after
of
football
you don't
season.
Have any sneaks in Seattle.
It's true. But that's actually not what we're talking about today. We're talking about, again, the Seahawks defeating the Detroit Lions 26-6 in today's NFC wild card round game. You were at the game. What were your main impressions at the game?
Do I want to start negative?
You know, it seems like a weird choice, but okay.
No, I'm going to come to this at the end. Right. I'm going to come to the end, the negative things, because I have a lot of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of fan experience complaints. Not performance.
Which is weird, because usually I'm the one with the fan experience complaints.
Your fan experience complaints are just about the people around you.
That's true.
You overhear conversations. Not conversations that are happening with you, but you overhear conversations that are happening and get furious about them.
And they're all about how bad Russell Wilson is.
But let's talk about the Lions, particular Lions game.
I would say, to a large extent, I don't think it did play out the way I expected. I guess that's not true at all. I take that back.
I can tell you the way that it played out the way that we expected.
How was that?
Which was the game that Russell Wilson had.
Well, the second half that Russell Wilson had.
But on the regularly scheduled Pelton cast from earlier this week, we discussed that there were quarterbacks who played against the Lions whose stats didn't look that impressive on paper, especially total yardage.
Yes.
But at the end of the game, they looked like very good games, and that's exactly where Russell Wilson ended.
I mean, he completed 23 of 30 passes, 76.7%, better even than the record-setting 72.7% that the Lions defense allowed this season, which did come up on the broadcast.
Really?
Yeah.
But he didn't throw for 300-plus yards. I mean, he was sitting on, like, 74 yards for a lot of the game.
Only ended up at 7.5 yards per attempt, which is fairly average.
So I think it was more that the Seahawks were willing to lean on the run game and not necessarily throwing the ball deep. But Russell Wilson...
Well, sometimes they try to lean on the run game, and the run game is like a rotten post, and they just fall over. In this case, the run game was a concrete pillar. It was part of the Parthenon.
Well, I want to get there in 1 second. Let's go back to that concrete pillar. Let's go back to the Parthenon in a second. But Russell Wilson played a game that, if you look at it on paper, aside from the completion percentage, is not going to really stand out to you, right?
Yes.
And even watching it doesn't necessarily stand out. But the thing that you'll look at, and the thing that the Lions have done so badly throughout the year, is that completion percentage.
And just the ability, therefore, to... What that means is the ability to move the chains... again, in conjunction with the run game, extend drives. They have possession in this game for over 36 minutes, run 71 plays to Detroit's 50. And that's a big reason why, you know, even though on a per-play basis, maybe these two teams weren't that different, but overall, the Seahawks were able to dominate.
Yeah. What about Thomas Rawls?
He was great. He was everything we envisioned him being this season, basically.
It was Thomas Rawls who we expected to see. Rawls from last year.
We went over the bold predictions recently. You predicted he would lead the NFL in rushing. Was that it?
That's the Thomas Rawls. It's funny because we were watching beforehand the Texans versus the Raiders, and DeAndre Hopkins had a really good game, and I'm still kind of salty about it. And the person who I was with, who I beat in the fantasy football final, was like, why are you complaining about that? I was like, oh, I could have done that through the regular season. He's like, you won fantasy football. That's my same argument for Thomas Rawls. It's like, where are your 160-yard, one-touchdown performances through the entire regular season?
You're like an Alabama fan who's like, you know, they should have shut out Washington.
It's like, you know, they won the national championship, but they could have won by a little bit more.
I did muse to you over text at one point that maybe the reason Rawls had such a weak regular season was just because of the fact that he was on your fantasy league team and you jinxed him. Because I think the best game he had, you didn't have him in the lineup.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Isn't that true against Carolina?
So I should start Ezekiel Elliott next week. But how sustainable? So Rawls, I mean, the runs in this game, the thing that Thomas Rawls did that I think is really impressive, and the thing that I think from any running back that they can do that's most impressive, is not big plays, but is the consistently picking up 5, 6, 7 plus yards on every single carry that they have. And that's what Thomas Rawls did in this game.
I mean, again, it was the same as last year, where Rawls was creating yards after first contact. That's what really stood out about him during his rookie season, when he was the most effective back in the DVOA, in the NFL by DVOA, if I recall correctly. But also, this credit has to be shared with the offensive line. The offensive line had their best run-blocking game of the season, I think it's fair to say.
But so, is it that the offensive line had their best run-blocking game of the season, or that they, as we discussed, playing against a defensive line who didn't feature one of the best defensive linemen in the league?
I'm a little of both. And, you know, Ziggy Ansah looked more like the healthy Ziggy Ansah who had 14 and a half sacks last year than the lesser version who had 2 sacks none before week 15 this year.
Maybe in pass rush, but not run.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be an elite run defender, certainly. I mean, Detroit did come in, I think, 23rd in DVOA against the run, which was the same.
Which is actually the thing that they're best at.
Exactly. And the same is where the Seahawks ranked offensively in rush DVOA. So on paper, this was an even matchup. So the fact that the Seahawks were able to dominate, even against a weak Detroit defense overall, still, I think, encouraging to me.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that I'm counting on Thomas Rawls to go for $160 against the Falcons next week.
But also, I mean, we've discussed this. We'll talk about going forward later, probably on the regularly scheduled podcast for this week. But this ain't the Denver Broncos from the Super Bowl coming in next week.
It is not.
This is the Atlanta Falcons, a team who can be run on. What about, though, Thomas Rawls solidifying the job?
I mean, it's interesting, yes. CJ Precise was out on the field before this game working out, going to be monitored this upcoming week with the chance to play against Atlanta.
Hello.
I mean, I'm still excited about it because here's the thing is I think the ideal scenario, what the Seahawks were envisioning when they drafted CJ Precise was not him being the every down back.
Yeah.
It was him being that third down back and complement to Rawls on the first two downs. And we still haven't seen them. You know, Shaquille McKissick, again, got most of the third down action
in
this
game.
Is
his name Shaquille? That's not his name. Isn't his name J.D. McKissick?
You're right. Shaquille McKissick was a fringe NBA prospect. And I keep confusing the two of them.
I don't know how you came He was in a movie about a genie in the 90s.
His name? No, that was actually Sinbad.
Oh, okay. Shaquille McKissick. Anyway, it's such a strange name that you came up with. I think I called Ben Burkervin Kevin Burkervin, which is totally normal. You called him Shaquille McKissick. Anyway.
Well, that's another person is what I'm telling you.
Okay, so J.D. McKissick.
Did not get a carry, had one target in this game. He wasn't really a factor. And I think one of the things that happened, so one of the big differences to me between the first half and the second half of this game, the pass blocking got better. But also was just kind of Russell Wilson settling in against the Detroit pass rush and making the right decision in the pocket as opposed to, you know, kind of eluding going into the pressure when he was trying to elude it.
Yeah, some of those sacks that happened in the first half were completely Russell's fault.
I wouldn't say completely Russell's fault.
Sure. Nothing is completely Russell's fault because it takes a line to get the defenders back there. But the way that he felt the pressure was different. Do you think that having the run game going made him feel more comfortable passing the ball?
I mean, it definitely helped the Seahawks because, you know,
Detroit
had to... It's
basically the first game he's played all year that he's really had a run game that was moving the ball.
like Carolina.
There may be three games, I suppose.
There's a handful in there. Yeah, I mean, that it has to help. Not necessarily a ton of play action in this game. Was there a play action on the Baldwin catch, the 42-yarder? I can't remember on that one. That was really the one big play they had.
I don't think so.
But I think it was really just him. I mean, and we've seen this throughout Russell Wilson's entire career, him said, like, getting more comfortable in the second half game.
Yeah.
But the point I was specifically trying to make to go back to that was, you know, when he gets pressured, he hasn't had that outlet valve in recent weeks. And the one time he did have that outlet valve was the brief period when CJ ProSize was healthy and really in a rhythm, the New England game and the start of the Philadelphia game.
Yes.
And he made big plays as a receiver. So even if he's not the every down back because of the fact that Thomas Rawls has now solidified that job, I still think ProSize would be a huge addition.
Did you see, by the way, this is completely unrelated, James Franklin, I think is his name, the Penn State coach.
That is
his halftime interview. He was like, "We hate the first half. We've hated it all season." I was like, "That I don't like anything about what you're saying right now." It's like, maybe you should just like coach better in the first half. Get your players prepared to play. Don't just say we hate the first half and we're going to play better in the second half. I didn't like anything about that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's kind of giving your team permission to play poorly in the first half. I don't think Pete Carroll would phrase it that way. He would say, "We love the second half."
Yeah, or we're good at finishing.
Yeah.
What about the Seahawks defensively? And specifically going against Matt Stafford.
So it's interesting. I mean, it's Matt Stafford's finger injury, which we talked a lot about leading up to this game. Everyone did. It's amazing how that caused his receivers to drop passes.
Yeah.
Like, it was like they had the finger injury and not Matt Stafford.
It's almost, I'm in a way, almost upset that the receivers dropped so many passes throughout this game. And it wasn't just any one particular player, right?
It was, I mean, yeah, it was everyone. It was,
I would say Marvin Jones, Golden Tate,
I think Eric
Ebron.
Ebron was probably the worst defender, two catches in his six targets, and he had some plays where, you know, he had Cam Chancellor beat one-on-one.
And the possibility of first downs. But to me, it's almost upsetting that that happened because it feels like the defense got, I don't want to say that they were lucky, but
that we didn't get a true measure of the defense?
We didn't really get a sense of, and the Lions are not a team who I think is really capable of necessarily beating them downfield, but we didn't get a sense of really what we were going up against.
I mean,
and
I
it's not going to prepare them against for the Falcons.
I disagree with that. I think Marvin Jones was very capable of beating them downfield, did on the one play on the sideline, which was basically a perfectly thrown ball.
You're
by
talking
Stafford.
About the Jeremy Lane pass. It was in front of Jeremy Lane.
Yeah, I mean, there was not a ton more that Jeremy Lane could have done.
No, and I'm not saying anything about Jeremy Lane, but I did want to talk about the specific defenders.
The fact that they moved Shedd into the slot to match up with Anquan Boldin and then put Lane on the outside.
Well, and also that throughout the game, being at the game, right, we saw Richard Sherman maybe one time.
Yeah.
The best mark of what Richard Sherman can do is not be seen.
I mean, I'm not sure that's the best use of him necessarily, but yes, this was one of those cases where he took an entire side of the field out of
play. And next week, let's assume that he matches up one-on-one with Julio Jones.
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I mean, we'll get to that in the preview because Taylor Gabriel has become a real problem.
I don't know if Taylor Gabriel is that much a problem. Let me just say, we're talking about needing Richard Sherman to match up with somebody. Taylor Gabriel is not somebody.
I know.
Terrifying.
I'm not saying that you need to match him up with Taylor Gabriel. I'm saying that maybe it doesn't make sense to just try to take away Julio Jones.
But so Richard Sherman in this game, in a game where there's no clear number one receiver, you don't want to see Richard Sherman.
By the way, can I make one Richard Sherman note?
What
amazing open field tackle of Stafford to prevent him from picking up a first down. I can't remember if that's the one they ended up picking. No, I think that was I think
the one
that
they stopped them on fourth down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a huge play in this game.
So there's Richard Sherman, who is almost not seen at all. Jeremy Lane, who I only remember one pass being against him, which was that one pass that there was basically a miraculous catch down the sideline. When you're there, it still looked like he didn't get 2 feet in bounds.
He did.
And then DeSean Shedd.
Yeah, this was maybe his best game of the season.
The clear standout, everybody's saying this, but the clear standout from the defense from this game is DeSean Shedd, right? So not just receivers dropping passes, but he played an almost perfect game.
I mean, he's actually getting in there and punching the ball out, Byron Maxwell style, to prevent those completions.
He was able to stay with receivers, and when receivers had the ball around them, make plays on the ball. It was an amazing performance by him.
But you know who I was going to say was the standout from this game?
Who?
Stephen Terrell, because of the fact that we didn't see those big plays across the middle, and Detroit did not even take a shot across the middle. And now maybe that's just them not throwing out the Earl Thomas playbook, but you know, that's on them.
Stephen, that's on them at that point. We don't beat ourselves up for that.
No, I agree with that. I'm just saying that changes the equation of how much to credit Terrell for it. But he did his job today. That's his job.
He's another player who I think we've learned over the last few weeks about Earl Thomas. It's great when Earl Thomas is seen, but it's even better when Earl Thomas isn't seen.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true in Earl Thomas's case.
And I think that's starting to be the case with Stephen Terrell also. Because in this week, nobody's going to be talking about Stephen Terrell after this. I mean, really, there's no individual defensive player aside from Deshaun Shedd who's going to stand out that much. The thing that'll stand out is the drop passes and just how futile Detroit was on offense.
I mean, you know, the main talking point after the game from players and coaches seemed to be, this was Seahawks football.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to what they were able to do offensively in terms of running the ball.
Yes.
And then also the way that they got a lead and just suffocated a team with the lead. That's exactly what they want to do. I would say the one big concern I have coming out of this game is the fact that they weren't really able to get much pressure on Stafford until late in the game when they had that big lead and could kind of wear them down.
It was that they weren't able to get much pressure, or that Matt Stafford was able to get out of pressure?
A little of both.
Because there were plays where it's like, man, they should have sacked him and just couldn't quite get to him.
That's a fair point.
I think couldn't bring him down, and Matt Staff made a few plays.
We mentioned in the preview that Stafford has been really effective with his legs this season. That has not been affected by his finger, and that played out in this game.
And he had 3 carries for 15 yards.
But I mean, in terms of moving around, sure. Which is, by the way, is 15 more yards. I don't know what Wilson ended up with because he took 3 kneels. So
he didn't really run the ball in this game.
Yeah, which is surprising because I think most people expected that after all the talk about he won't wear the brace this week. You know, he's ready to take that off. You assumed you might see Wilson a little bit unleashed. You still obviously had the threat of the read option helping Thomas Rawls at times, yeah. But never pulled it down once.
Didn't really need to.
He also, there was one opportunity. There was a 3rd and 4 in the red zone where the Seahawks, he had an opportunity to scramble. I think he probably could have picked up the first down. Instead opted to throw, I think, to Graham on that one. Incomplete. Seahawks had to settle for a field goal. So we'll see if he, you know, I think that was just looking for the bigger play.
But there were some nice passes to Jimmy Graham. There's the one pass that almost hit him in the chest for a first down. And I think he broke out of a tackle after that one. But the catch of the game, clearly, was to Paul Richardson.
Paul Richardson. A toast to Paul Richardson.
That's what I was going to say, is we need a toast to P. Rich. There's nothing...
Can we toast to Thomas Rawls, too?
I mean, yes. Yeah. Toast to Thomas Rawls, toast to Paul Richardson. Toast to... Well, let's talk about Paul Richardson first. Being at the game, right, so they're on this 4th down play. They throw it to Peterson in the end zone. We see the flag come in. And that's what we're celebrating at the game. We're cheering because a flag came in and it's going to be 1st and goal from the 1 for the Seahawks because you can see that there's contact and you can see that a flag came in. But then all of a sudden, all the players are cheering as if they'd scored a touchdown and it's kind of like, what's happening here? Wait, what? Did he catch that ball? There's no possible way that he caught that pass.
Yeah, watching that on TV, you know, you could see the hand come in and the ball's there, and you can't tell whether it's like has touched the ground or not in real time. But I'm like, is that a catch? That looked like a catch. Why aren't they saying it's a catch? And then they did say it was a catch, and that was great.
It was such an amazing play that we had no idea even what was going on.
Then I ran around my living room a little bit.
Did you dance like Paul Richardson? Did you dance like him?
Not exactly the same.
Dude, Paul Richardson knew immediately that it was a catch.
It was really exciting because you remember 2 years ago when he was injured in the Seahawks' first playoff game. That was at that point in the divisional round because they had the number 2 seed and a bye. But he like was really starting to come on at that point of the season. I think had a big catch early in that game against Carolina,
yeah.
And then suffered the injury and, you know, has basically been plagued by it for a full year a full calendar year after that, and this is kind of the first time he's really moved past it.
It does feel like we're starting to really realize what Paul Richardson could be. I mean, it means that it ended up taking a severe injury to Tyler Lockett to make that be the case, but I think we're finally seeing exactly the full utility of Paul Richardson now.
And it makes another brilliant one-hand catch along the sideline.
Can we also toast at Doug Baldwin?
Well, first off, I'm very angry at Doug Baldwin.
What?
He took a touchdown away from Jermaine Kearse.
Oh, see, here's what I'm thinking here. I have a bone to pick with you.
Okay.
About Jermaine Kearse. So you're going on and on and on defending Jermaine Kearse, right? And there's nobody out there defending Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin, who's...
Literally, I'm saying there's no secondary. There's nobody defending Doug Baldwin.
You think he was open on literally every play? That's your position?
I mean, he had 12 targets and 11 catches.
As was pointed out in the broadcast, and we probably didn't do a good enough job of previewing this, Detroit has been exceptionally poor at covering in the slot because of the fact that they're down to their third nickel corner.
I think we covered that they're exceptionally poor at covering every receiver.
Well, but we should have highlighted that Baldwin in the slot was really going to be a problem for them. And indeed it was.
I mean, Jermaine Kearse is one thing. Like, we can defend Jermaine Kearse.
I just don't understand what this argument. Who's attacking Doug Baldwin?
Nobody's attacking Doug Baldwin.
Is anyone calling him pedestrian anymore?
Constantly be talking about how great Doug Baldwin is.
That's fine. Okay, Doug Baldwin's awesome. Toast to Doug Baldwin.
Doug Baldwin.
But he already had a touchdown. Jermaine Kearse's thing is he scores touchdowns in the play. Wait, he didn't.
That was his only touchdown.
Okay, I guess.
I don't know what other touchdowns you're seeing.
He already had the 42-yard catch. Yeah, Rawls scored the second touchdown.
Paul Richardson, Rawls, and Baldwin.
Jermaine Kearse had scored 6 touchdowns in his 10 playoff games, and that could have been number 7. It was right there. He was waiting for it. And then here's Doug Baldwin to take it away.
It was kind of amazing.
It was really hilarious.
I'm all for it.
The kind of thing you could really laugh about when it puts you up 26-6 in a playoff game.
Yes. Man, I had one other thought, but I can't remember what it was.
You want to get to your negative thought?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about negative things here.
Can we just, like, maybe just whisper really quickly? Stephen Hauschka missed another.
Oh, yeah, we do need to talk about that. Okay, so here's the thought about that. Let's say that we're in a situation, right, because the Seahawks are advancing in the playoffs. Let's say that they're in a situation where they're down 7 points to Atlanta, right? They come down, score a touchdown. How little are you expecting to hit the extra point in this situation?
If they just kick the extra point from 43 yards and called it a field goal, he'd be perfect. He'd be money.
Do you think that the Seahawks are, and I know that Pete Carroll won't do this because it's not a Pete Carroll thing, are nearing a point where maybe they should start considering going for 2 a little
bit
more?
No, because they're really bad at scoring from the 2. We've gone over this. They are so bad at that. Like I can't remember what the exact number was, but it was about 40% at scoring from the 1. I guess you're from the 1 in the NFL and the 2 in the college game.
The 1 in the NFL?
I don't know. Maybe I have it backwards.
Two. They're not from the 1.
I guess I have that backwards. From the 2 in the NFL, from the 1 in the college game,
or something like that.
Anyway, if optimistically, the expected value of a 2-point conversion is 0.8 points, and I do think Hauschka's true extra point ability is greater than 80%. I don't know where he is this season.
He's reached a point where we've seen enough bad extra point kicking that we're not going to expect him to automatically hit that. You don't score a touchdown and say, boom, we're tied if it's a 7-point game.
Yes, that's fair.
And with Matt Bryant, you do. It's a little bit nerve-wracking. Okay, so that's a negative. The other negative is, here are a few of them. First off,
he's 83% coming into today, by the way.
The fans in playoff games are always worse than fans in the regular season.
Inevitably, because the tickets are more expensive.
Not that much more expensive.
Actually, I guess, yeah, today they weren't that expensive. I saw some note that it was like the cheapest game to get in the door since like 2014.
That's insane, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, I don't know. I don't have an explanation for that.
You want to hear the sound of the bandwagon? They're waving goodbye.
Well, they're not after today. They're back on.
You think they're back on?
Well, I think they're back on.
I don't know. I mean, I was talking to our mom about this, and she was like, you know, the Seahawks have been playing so badly lately. I was like, this is still the fifth best record in franchise history.
I had someone tell me on Twitter that that Russell Wilson had been downright bad lately.
It's like, can we get some perspective here?
You remember Charlie Whitehurst was our quarterback not that long ago?
I was thinking of Charlie Whitehurst and the savior of the team, despite clipboard Jesus. There was another savior, and his name was Matt Flynn.
Yeah, I didn't even go to Matt Flynn. I didn't need to pull that card out.
But the fans are always worse in a playoff game because it's people who might not be there at their seats the entire season, right?
Okay.
You get people who don't have the same kind of experience at going to games.
I feel like there should be a class about this or something.
So
maybe you should be required to like watch a 15-minute video before you can attend a Seahawks game.
Inevitably, you're not going to have the exact... Most games through most of the season, you're going to have roughly the same fans, right? 70% of the stadium is going to be basically the same.
But were there Lions fans there, by the way?
A couple.
Okay.
So I think it was maybe the second offensive possession that the Seahawks had. And Russell kind of walked into a couple sacks in a row. There was booing from the crowd.
Now, you said this on Twitter, is that they were booing Russell Wilson.
Who else are they booing? You think they're booing the team? Russell Wilson had just walked into two sacks. They definitely weren't booing anybody else.
I think, A, they could have been booing Daryl Bevel, who's not tremendously, not notably popular among Seahawks fans.
How do you boo Daryl Bevel, though? We didn't even know what the play calls were because Russell Wilson took the sacks.
B, probably booing the offensive line.
Could have been booing the offensive line. You don't boo anybody in a playoff game.
I agree.
They went to the playoffs.
No, look, it's one thing if like they were down 42-0 in the fourth quarter. Like, okay, fine. Boo your hearts out.
I think it was tied. Zero.
Yeah, no, I look like you're
not, there weren't huge
You're
boos.
Arguing with me like I'm arguing against you.
it's not like the whole stadium was booing, but there were audible boos from the stadium coming in at that point. It was like this.
Yeah, that's bad.
Screw this. This is not what happens in this situation. You're in a playoff game. You are 100% behind your team the whole game.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then also Seahawks game ops. Right?
Oh.
Who made the decision to have Steve Hodgson raise the 12th man flag before the game? I don't think I've ever seen a cooler reception to somebody raising the 12th man flag. Oh, people don't like Steve Hodgson. It's not like there are people out there who are like, oh, well, still a Seahawks legend. He had maybe one good season, and then, oh, he was a good lineman, right? And then immediately left us with a poison pill in his contract after the team went to the Super Bowl to an NFC rival. There is nobody who likes Steve Hutchinson. He can go to hell. He is not a Seahawk legend.
Oh, my. You feel as strongly about this as I feel about Lorenzo Romar. In the opposite direction, obviously.
It's not just that I hate Steve Hutchinson. It's that it was baffling that they would bring Steve Hutchinson to raise the 12th man flag for a playoff game.
All right, I'm going to ask you to calm down because you're going to wake up your children.
I'll tell them all about Steve Hutchinson. I'll be like, you should have seen the left side of the line when it was Big Walt Jones and Steve Hutchinson. They were amazing. And then he went to Minnesota after we went to the Super Bowl, basically ending that run for the Seahawks. Nobody looks back on him and is like,
they won the NFC
West
several more times.
They went to the Super Bowl when?
They won the NFC West several more times.
Oh, it was a down NFC West. But do you not agree with me? Steve Hutchinson is not a Seahawk legend because he is somebody who left the team at their highest point.
I think
even Golden Tate, who came back this week, left the team after they won the Super Bowl. We still look back more fondly from Golden Tate than we did.
Why is Golden Tate getting caught in this drive-by? Like,
because he's somebody who left immediately after the team.
Yeah,
won the
because
Super Bowl.
They didn't offer him very much money.
Well, he didn't receive the offer.
There was some miscommunication. Pete Carroll cleared that up. But like he said, he understood Golden Tate leaving. So I want to defend that decision first.
I think I can think of almost anybody in Seahawks history who I dislike more than Steve Hutchinson.
I'm sure I could think of some people.
Come up with some people. Let's come up with your top five most hated Seahawks history right now. Right here, right now.
Sean Alexander.
But Sean Alexander gave his all every game, right?
Yes.
Sean Alexander gave the best that Sean Alexander had.
It's just that the best Sean Alexander had didn't involve the best for the team.
I remember a poll quote that they had from like a 950 interview. This is before 710 existed. And there was a quote when they were talking about renegotiating the contract to Sean Alexander. He was like, well, that's the kind of thing you do with like washed up players. And then I think he was cut maybe 3 weeks after that. It was like, Sean Alexander, you just don't know who Sean Alexander is. But that you can't fault him for that. Steve Hutchinson did something intentionally.
Time heals all wounds.
Does not heal this wound.
It clearly does not with you. I don't. I have.
Time, okay, first off, time does not heal the wound of Super Bowl XL.
It's healed a little bit. It's not.
Not at all.
It's not open. Sore.
First off, I'm happy that we beat Detroit because that happened in Detroit. But no, can you come up with anybody else? You came up with Sean Alexander. Who else you got?
I mean, I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
This should be obvious. Rick Meyer?
I think you kind of have pretty positive feelings for Rick Meyer.
I really like Rick Meyer. Solid backup quarterback. Just really never meant to... He never was meant to be what he was.
This clearly... I'll be curious to hear from listeners whether they feel the same way.
The response to Steve Hutchinson was nowhere near... There was not an outpour of support, which I've seen for almost everybody doing... They could have been like, here's some person for some random holiday that nobody has ever heard of, and that person would have gotten effusive praise. But Steve Hutchinson was a very chilly response. It was like, okay, raise your flag. Let's play the game. Already spoiled the game for us from the very start.
Just talking a lot right now. I feel like if you have Steve Hutchinson for like week 11 against Chicago, like that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Whatever.
This is a playoff
game.
Not
for a playoff game.
The other thing is they do, you know about the city comparison that they do.
It's meant to be
like an insult to the other city, I don't feel comfortable insulting the city of Detroit, first off. Second off, they were like, engineering pioneer, and this was the last one they knew, it was supposed to be the joke one, Henry Ford and Paul Allen, as if we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, Henry Ford, that guy sucks. It's like, what are you talking about?
Everyone knows Japanese cars are better.
It was like, oh yeah, noted asshole, Henry Ford.
I mean, it is
interesting. He's like the Steve Hutchinson of car makers.
They did actually make that exact comparison on the broadcast, explaining that the two industries are associated with the ownership of the two teams. So
did they also make the comparison that Henry Ford was the worst?
They did not draw that implication at any point, no.
I thought that was a crazy one. I mean, nowhere near as bad as having Steve Hutchinson raise the 12th.
So this doesn't sound like that was that enjoyable a game for you to attend, was it?
No, it was great otherwise.
Okay. I thought I enjoyed having this game, having Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth on the call. They did a really nice job with this game. Yeah.
Okay. I still want to hear your top five most hated Seahawks.
I mean, I don't hate that many Seahawks. If you have hate in your heart, let it out.
I'm letting it out right now.
Okay, yeah, I guess you are. You're doing exactly that.
I don't hate that many Seahawks. Where does Jim Moore rank, by the way? Does
he count? True.
Jim Moore is coaches.
Jim L. Moore is pretty high on my list.
He might be number one. He's the only person affiliated with the Seahawks who you actively dislike.
If he raised the 12th man flag, it's not like I would get. I mean, that'd be a really weird choice, but I guess he could be like the Husky legend.
Is it that different for him to raise the 12th man flag than Steve Hutchinson?
Yeah, because Jim Mora did not have any like successes with the Seahawks.
Jim Mora was fired. He didn't choose to leave the team.
Yeah, but I'm saying you can't remember like the glory days of the Jim Mora era.
Were you throwing out the idea of him being a Husky legend? Yeah. Maybe while he's coaching UCLA?
I mean, it would probably had to have happened in the year after he was fired by the Seahawks, before he went to UCLA.
Uh-huh. Maybe it'll happen after he's fired by UCLA.
Well,
he'll be special assistant to Coach Peterson on the Husky coaching staff.
They're going to be crowded. I don't know how they're going to fit him and Mark Helfrich both on the staff.
Every time any Pac-12 coach is fired, they'll join the Husky coaching staff as special assistant. I really like that plan.
I don't feel like Todd Graham's going to fit in well. I don't know if he's no KG. Anything else to say about this game?
Nothing else to say about this game.
So,
but next week, top five most hated Seahawks.
I mean, you can do that. I just want to talk about my top five favorite Seahawks. I want to be a little more positive on this podcast.
Do you have those
today
also?
I mean, not off the top of my
head. Sean Springs, Marcus Trufant, Russell, obviously, Doug Baldwin.
Marshawn Lynch?
Oh, gotta be Marshawn.
You probably didn't catch him on Brooklyn Nine-Nine last week.
I definitely did not.
It was a great appearance by Marshawn Lynch.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're making me want to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah. I mean, he was only in the first 5 minutes of the show. You don't have to continue watching after that if you don't want to.
Good news.
We're going to study the Falcons further maybe review some tape of that regular season matchup between the Seahawks and the Falcons and come back with a full preview later this week as part of the regular Pelton cast. But for now, thanks for listening.
Thanks.